This week, a cornerstone interview that decodes the issues behind the recent U.S. bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities. We talk about what uranium enrichment consists of and how almost every journalist covering this issue has been getting it wrong about Iran's current nuclear weapons capability. I talk with Dr. Gordon Edwards of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility on what it takes uranium-wise to build a weapon. It is a total eye-opener. I spoke with Dr. Gordon Edwards on June 30th, 2025. I have to say that uranium enrichment is not a subject that I have a great deal of familiarity with. So I would appreciate your explaining what have been the concerns kicked off by Iran's uranium enrichment program.
People are concerned about the spread of the atomic bomb to nations that we think are a particular threat to us and our allies, Israel being an ally of the United States and of Canada. But the world in general, if we have nuclear weapons spreading to nations around the world, then any conflict anywhere in the world can turn into a nuclear war. And that's a very concerning issue, because once a nuclear war starts, nobody knows how to put an end to it. Nobody knows how to call a truce or a ceasefire. The reason for that is that once one nuclear bomb goes off, you don't know how many more are coming. And therefore, there's a panicky reaction. We have to either use them or lose them. In other words, if we don't fire our nuclear weapons right away, they might be all gone in a nuclear holocaust of its own. So how many minutes do you have to decide to make such a decision? It's frightening to think of. And if you think of countries like India and Pakistan, both of which are nuclear armed and which are close neighbors of each other, you don't have any time to think. If one nuclear explosion goes off, you have to retaliate instantly or not at all. So this is a concern. The concern is the spread of nuclear weapons capabilities around the world. My consideration is that you cannot run the world forever on hypocrisy. You cannot run the world forever on a double standard. And the idea that some countries are entitled to have nuclear weapons and other countries are not entitled to have nuclear weapons is, I think, a non-starter. If you really want to have a peaceful world free of nuclear holocaust, then you really have to think about a world without nuclear weapons altogether. And in fact, we have legal instruments, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, for example, where it is stated in Article 6, those countries with nuclear weapons promise to negotiate in good faith to get rid of them. And what we see is the opposite. Right now, we see a world in which the United States, Russia, China, and other nuclear weapon states are ramping up their nuclear capabilities, doing the opposite of getting rid of them. We're simply accelerating the lethality of these weapons. And at the same time, we are pointing to countries like Iran, which they say should never have a nuclear weapon. So what we're saying is, do not do as we do as we say.
Uranium enrichment has been a sticking point, has been a focus for the bombings and for a lot of the discussion that's been going on. Explain what uranium enrichment is and what is important about it as regards weapons.
Okay, the first thing to know is that uranium is the only material found on Earth naturally occurring that can be used to make an atomic bomb or to fuel a nuclear reactor. Without uranium, there would be no nuclear weapons of any description, nor would there be any nuclear fission reactors. But there's only one type of uranium that can be used for those two purposes, and that's called uranium-235. And when you mine uranium out of the earth, only 7 atoms out of 1,000 are uranium-235. That's the so-called chain reacting type of uranium. It's the uranium that can undergo a nuclear chain reaction to release untold power and destroy cities with a single bomb, like we did at Hiroshima in August 6, 1945. That was a uranium bomb. A single uranium bomb destroyed an entire city. When you mine uranium out of the earth, there's only 7 atoms out of 1,000 that are chain reacting types of uranium. Natural uranium, with only 7 atoms out of 1,000 that are explosive, you might say, it cannot be made into a bomb. You can't make it. There's too much dead weight. There's too much of the other type of uranium, which is called uranium-238. That's non-chain reacting. It cannot be used to make a bomb, nor can you use it if you've got too much uranium-238 present. That means that you need to concentrate those chain reacting uranium atoms into a much higher percentage in order to make a bomb or in order to fuel a nuclear reactor. Now, for a nuclear reactor, you only have to go up a little bit. You can go up to 3% or 5% of the chain reacting variety. That's a lot more than natural uranium has. And that can be used as fuel for light water nuclear reactors, as all of the power reactors in the States. If you go all the way up to 90%, that's called weapons-grade uranium. And that can be used to make beautiful, powerful atomic bombs that are enormously destructive. I say beautiful only from the point of view of weaponeers. However, it's a mistake to think that you need 90% enrichment to make an atomic bomb. In fact, the Hiroshima bomb used on the city of Hiroshima in 1945, it was a uranium bomb, and it was only enriched to about 80%. Now, Iran has enriched about 400 kilograms of uranium up to the 60% level. 60% is more than enough to make a powerful atomic bomb. So if they wanted to, Iran could make atomic bombs with the uranium that they've already enriched. And I don't believe that any degree of military bombing would have destroyed those stockpiles of enriched uranium. I'm sure that Iran would have moved those stockpiles of uranium to a different location in order to hang on to it for later use. Now, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, 20%, even at 20%, you have at that point achieved what's called highly enriched uranium. 20% and beyond is considered highly enriched. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency, you can make a bomb out of even 20% enriched uranium, but it would be a very big device, a lot bigger than the bomb that you could drop from an airplane. You could, however, put such a bomb in the hull of a ship, sail it into the harbor, and let it rip. Or you could put it in a truck and cross the border and let it rip. So, as was said under the President Reagan's domain as presidency, we could wake up one day and find Washington, D.C. gone and not even know who did it. So these bombs don't have to be delivered by missiles or by airplanes. They can be delivered by any method that one can think of for delivering an explosive device. Most recently, they've been talking about building new reactors in the United States and elsewhere, which have higher degrees of enrichment than previously. Up till now, all of the power reactors in the world use no more than 5% enriched uranium. At that level of enrichment, at that level, remember again that when we say 5%, what we're talking about is the explosive kind of uranium. It's called uranium-235. It's the chain reacting type of uranium. That's the stuff you need to get nuclear energy from it, either in the form of a bomb or in the form of a nuclear reactor. Now, if it's only up to 5%, you can use it as fuel for a reactor, but you can't use it for bombs. It's just not enough. You have to get up to at least 12% before you can even think of it. But there is a kind of a gray area in between 12% and 20%. It's still called low enriched uranium, but that stuff can be used for powerful weapons. You can make powerful bombs out of uranium that is enriched below 20%. But above 12%. Now, this is a danger zone because in that zone, we find a lot of the newly proposed nuclear reactors that are being promoted in the United States and around the world. For example, the Natrium reactor that is being built in Wyoming or is planned to be built in Wyoming will use a not highly enriched uranium, but this intermediate ground is called HALEU. HALEU means high assay, low enriched uranium. It's a fancy word, HALEU. It's a danger zone because you can make bombs with it directly without having to do further enrichment. And that is a real problem because the United States and other countries like Canada want to sell these reactors around the world. They think that this is a sensible way to fight climate change, even though there are alternatives which are much cheaper and much faster to build and much quicker to pay back their investment. Nevertheless, there is such a vested interest in nuclear. So much money has already been poured into this technology that the governments of several countries, including the United States and Canada, have been convinced that their best bet is to invest billions and billions of dollars in nuclear power plants. They are too slow and too expensive to really be an effective way of fighting climate change, but that's what's happening nevertheless.
When you talk about weapons in the 12 to 20% enrichment range, how does that relate, if it does, to what we call dirty bombs?
Dirty bombs are different. Dirty bombs are conventional bombs, just using conventional explosives to scatter dangerous radioactive material abroad. For example, plutonium happens to be very toxic. It's 18,000 times more toxic than tritium. People have heard of tritium. It's radioactive hydrogen. Every disintegration of tritium, that's called a becquerel. One disintegration per second is called a becquerel of tritium. In the case of plutonium-239, one becquerel is 18,000 times more biologically damaging. So if you put a small amount of plutonium, even a few grams, and surround it with conventional explosives and just detonate it in a downtown area or in a shopping mall or in the ventilation system of a large building, comparable to the World Trade Center, for example, you can kill an awful lot of people. That's a dirty bomb, but that's not a nuclear explosion. It doesn't have the destructive power. It's just dangerously radioactively contaminating of people's lungs and bodies.
With the enrichment that Iran is doing, is it illegal?
No, it's not illegal. That's the ironic thing here, is that there's no law or treaty which actually prohibits enriching uranium to any desired degree. In fact, the United States and Canada and the United Kingdom and France and many other countries enrich uranium to very high levels, including weapons grade levels, just in order to achieve certain civilian purposes. For example, there are certain civilian nuclear reactors that we had in Canada here that produced medical isotopes, and they used weapons grade uranium as targets for producing those medical isotopes. Now, the danger is that anybody who has their hands on weapons grade uranium can simply make a choice to use it for peaceful purposes or to use it for military purposes. So you're putting an awful lot of trust in the government you're giving this material to, or the government you're entrusting this material to. And there's not a lot of trust for the Iranian government for very good reason, because they are a very totalitarian regime and very fanatical in many ways. Also sworn enemies of Israel and sworn to eradicate Israel from the face of the earth. So in that case, the idea that they would have access to weapons-grade uranium, even though they claim it would be for civilian purposes, and it could well be for civilian purposes, but do you trust them to be able to just turn around and use that for bombs? It doesn't have to be 90%, however. They could make very good weapons with 60% enriched uranium, which they already have. They already have a large stock of 60% enriched uranium. And just because you may blow up the centrifuges that produce that material in the first place doesn't mean the material itself has been destroyed. It's still there.
If Iran does still have its 400 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium and they choose to make a bomb out of it, do they have the means to deliver it, to get it to one of the targets, be it Israel, be it the United States, or someplace else?
I do believe they do. They have, of course, rockets aplenty, ballistic missile rockets, as well as others. And those are what you need to deliver these weapons. Now, a bomb made out of 60% uranium will be a little larger in size than one made out of 90% enriched. The higher the enrichment, the smaller the actual physical size of the bomb could be. But it could be equally powerful, and it's just a question of accommodating a larger payload.
With the bombing that the U.S. did, what do we know about any potential radiation release, any toxicity, either from uranium or from any of the materials that are used to enrich the uranium, such as uranium hexafluoride?
Yes. Well, uranium itself is not a material whose radioactivity is going to kill anybody quickly. It doesn't give off penetrating radiation such as gamma radiation. So you can't fry somebody with uranium. The danger of uranium is inhalation. When you inhale it or ingest it into your body, then it slowly damages the interior cells. And those cells, some of those cells may slowly turn into cancer cells. But the cancer would not normally show up for decades after exposure. So it's a poisonous material. Of course, it's a radioactive heavy metal, and you know all heavy metals are poisonous. But it's not necessarily going to kill you right away, but it will contaminate your body in such a way that you may die years or decades later from various forms of cancer. That's the main danger from uranium as a radioactive material. However, in this particular case, in order to enrich it, you have to turn it into a gas. Uranium is not a gas, it's a heavy metal. But you can make a compound with fluorine, and it's called uranium hexafluoride. And it's a very nasty material, very, very toxic to humans. If you breathe that in, it's going to kill you chemically, not by radioactivity, but just because of the chemistry. On contact with moisture, it turns into a very caustic acid, which is going to burn the organs of anybody who inhales it. And so it's dangerous from a chemical point of view, rather than from a radioactive point of view.
Do we have any knowledge as to whether it was released in any of the bombings that took place?
I haven't heard a word of any traces of uranium hexafluoride that have been seen, but I imagine that the workers, this would probably be exposure of workers in the facilities themselves who would be so exposed. Now, that would only be if the centrifuges had that gas in them at the moment that the bombs took place. It's possible that Iran had enough time to shut down the centrifuges, extract the uranium hexafluoride, store it into airtight drums, which is what they normally do, and then move those drums to another location so that they would still be there, still be available for use later on. And at any given moment, that hexafluoride can be reconverted by chemical means back into a metal. And it's in the form of a metal that it would be used as a nuclear explosive.
The geopolitics around this have been kicked into overdrive, confusion, conflicting stories, and a great deal of uncertainty. If you were in charge of the geopolitics surrounding enriched uranium, what steps would you take to dial back the current level of risk and danger?
Well, it was already done under the Obama administration. Dialing back the danger was exactly what the original deal with Iran was, and Iran agreed to it. And the deal was very, very strict. It was a deal signed by all the parties involved that would not allow Iran to enrich uranium beyond 5%. That's much lower than what would be required for some of the new reactors that we're building in the United States, for example, or and in Canada. So it's a very strict limitation on the degree of enrichment. Iran agreed to that. Now, Prime Minister Netanyahu goaded the first Trump presidency into breaking out of that deal. And so the US broke that deal and said, we're no longer going to abide by it. So all of a sudden, that agreement was gone. And Iran proceeded to enrich beyond the 5% level, all the way up to, as we know now, up to the 60% level. So it's ironic that Trump is now trying to establish a deal with Iran when he's the one who walked out of the original deal. And that original deal was the tightest agreement ever made in the world to limit uranium enrichment. At the time, I gave some interviews about that deal, and I pointed out that Iran had also agreed to intrusive inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency, that the International Atomic Energy Agency could send their inspectors to any facility, underground or above ground, anywhere in Iran, and verify that nothing was being done to violate that deal. It was Prime Minister Netanyahu who was so very concerned, with very good reason, for Iran's other activities, support of Hezbollah, support of Hamas, support of the Houthis and Yemen. Because Prime Minister Netanyahu was so concerned about the other military activities of Iran and its proxies, they wanted no deal. They did not want this deal because this deal allowed Iran to keep some of the money that was previously blockaded from their, they were prevented from accessing billions of dollars in funds. These were what are called sanctions. There were strict sanctions against Iran prior to the signing of the deal. The signing of the deal not to proceed with nuclear weapons allowed Iran to have access to those billions of dollars. And I think Prime Minister Netanyahu was more worried about that than he was about the nuclear situation. And so he wanted that deal broken so the sanctions could be reimposed. And so we're going around a kind of a merry-go-round here. But I would like to point out that in my view, that agreement not to enrich beyond 5%, if that were not just a deal with the Iranians, but an international agreement with all parties that none of them would enrich beyond 5%, I think you would have a real basis for peace. Because I don't believe that you can expect that you're going to have a long-standing peace when some parties are allowed to enrich up to 93% and other parties are not allowed to enrich beyond 5%. Let's make it a universal rule. If nuclear weapons are bad, and if access to nuclear explosive materials is bad, then let's make it bad for everybody. And let's agree that none of us are going to enrich uranium beyond 5%. That would be the beginning of the end of the nuclear weapons program worldwide, which is all what we really want in the long run.
What do you think are the odds of something like that happening, and who might be, what might be the country that leads it?
Well, the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985 for pointing out, first of all, that there is no cure for nuclear weapons, that we doctors cannot help you. In the case of a nuclear war, there will be no hospitals, there will be no medication, there will be no medical personnel. We can't help you. So don't think that there's a cure for nuclear war. The only cure is prevention. The other point they made is that nuclear weapons are akin to an addiction. And like all addictions, it's not easily broken. And that the only way that you can break an addiction is to have a good support group of people supporting the addict and strengthening his resolve to rid himself or herself of the addiction. And that's what the other countries of the world should be doing. And that's what the citizens of the world should be doing. They should be putting pressure on the nuclear weapon states to get rid of their nuclear weapons, to stop pursuing endless nuclear proliferation, which can only result in endless nuclear war. Sooner or later, these weapons are going to be used by somebody somewhere. And when they start being used, who is going to blow the whistle on and call it to a stop? So we really have the power for the first time in the history of evolution, 4 billion year evolution of life on Earth. We, the human species, have the ability to put an end to it all in a matter of hours. And we shouldn't really live with that risk. If we want to have non-suicidal children and grandchildren, then we have to make a future which is going to be sustainable and at least offers a hope of peacefulness internationally. And I believe that that's a worthwhile goal. And I think that's the goal we are legally obliged to pursue according to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But it only makes common sense from a human point of view. And even from the point of view of the 4 billion year evolution of life on Earth, why put an end to that? We're the only planet in the solar system that has this amazing multitude of life. Why would we want to end it?
Can you see anything good coming out of the current situation?
I think that the best thing about it is that it has opened some people's eyes to the dangers of uranium enrichment and therefore to the dangers of nuclear power as a whole. Because it's necessary if you want to put an end to nuclear weapons, you really have to put an end to the material foundation of nuclear weapons, and that is access to the weapons' usable materials, highly enriched uranium and plutonium. If you make those materials inaccessible, not just to the weapon states, but to everybody, including terrorists, including criminals, they can't get a hold of what isn't there. So, putting an end to the production of these materials, stopping uranium enrichment, stopping plutonium extraction, which is called reprocessing, these would be material steps in the right direction. And in fact, our Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau, the father of the recent Prime Minister who just resigned in Canada, he made a speech to the United Nations in 1978 in which he espoused what he called a strategy of suffocation. He says, if we want to really put an end to the nuclear weapons race, then we have to choke off the vital oxygen on which it feeds. And the vital oxygen on which it feeds is the existence of these weapons-grade materials, highly enriched uranium and plutonium. Stop the production of those, and you don't get rid of nuclear weapons immediately, but you make it possible to get rid of the existing nuclear weapons without fear that somebody else somewhere else is building new ones. As long as people are producing the materials, you can never be sure that somebody around the corner isn't producing more nuclear weapons. We want to get away from that. The only way you can get away from that is to get rid of the material foundation on which it's based.
Is there anything else you'd like to add at this point?
I would like to add one thing, and that is that it turns out that enriched uranium bombs are much easier to make than plutonium bombs. Plutonium can also be used to make nuclear weapons, and that's where a lot of the concern has been expressed over the decades, access to plutonium. True, that's a danger. But it turns out that plutonium bombs are much more complicated to build. You need to have a perfect sphere of plutonium surrounded by plastic explosives that drive that sphere inward toward the center. It's called an implosion device. It's not a simple thing to make. It can be made, however, by terrorist groups or criminal organizations or even demented individuals. But with a uranium bomb, the mechanism is so simple that anybody could do it. All you have to do for a uranium bomb is to fire one chunk of uranium into another chunk of uranium called a target in such a way that both of those two pieces add up to more than a critical mass. There's a thing called a critical mass of uranium. You can't have a bomb without a critical mass. So if you fire one chunk of uranium, enriched uranium, into another chunk, you can have a powerful explosion. That's the way the Hiroshima bomb worked. And you don't even need to test a bomb like that. America used that bomb on Hiroshima without ever testing it. It was so simple, it could not fail. And so enriched uranium, if anything, is even more frightening than plutonium as a bomb material. The bombs can be made by anybody who knows how to make bombs of any kind.
What a joyful conversation.
Oh, you asked me for the bright side of this. I think the bright side is that many people may come to the realization that we can't keep going down this path and that uranium enrichment is not the blessing that it is sometimes thought to be. As we enrich the uranium, we impoverish the world.
Dr. Gordon Edwards, you maintain a level of understanding and an ability to express it about this very complex set of issues that is truly remarkable and always welcomed by myself and I know by my listeners from the feedback that I get from them. So, for the work that you've been doing and continue to do, long may you wave, and thank you for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you very much, Libby.
That was Dr. Gordon Edwards, a mathematician, physicist, nuclear consultant, and co-founder and president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Response.